This is East End Ink. Today we present poets Elaine Sexton and Andrea Carter Brown, recorded at Canyo's Books in Sag Harbor. Here is Canyo's Marianne Calendrill to introduce Elaine Sexton.
Elaine will be reading from the new collection Drive. These poems touch on the fragility of connections to lovers, family, those living, those lost, as well as connections to the self. Her previous poetry books include Sleuth, Causeway, and Retrospective Refuge. Elaine Sexton's poems, art reviews, book reviews, and visual art have appeared in American Poetry Review, Art in America, and Poetry Magazine. She teaches at Sarah Lawrence College. She's a former senior editor at Art News.
So the title of my book is Drive. Some of the poems literally take place in a car, but it's really using the idea of drive as what it is to have drive, to be driven. It's the verb and the noun, driving. And it uses, many of the poems do take place in the car, but they're really, the more interviews I've done, the more I've been reading about my book through the eyes of other people, I realize, of course, that the body is a kind of a vehicle. And so there's a lot of metaphoric leaps in this collection. One poem called Self-Portrait Between the Car and the Sea. And I borrowed this title from a painting, one of the last paintings Edvard Munch painted, Self-Portrait Between the Clock and the Bed. And if you think of it for a minute, it was about aging. It was really, again, I think it could have literally been his last painting. So this poem is also about that. Self-Portrait Between the Car and the Sea. I think I'll stay blonde a while longer. Downshifting for the view today, the engine strains in first gear the way on foot my body climbing the last few steps does. You'd hear it too if the heart had a literal voice, silently pulling for itself, the will wants the body to give it what it wants. How long will these parts last? I put off minding the flags lifting their faces. I watch sea lice flit from shell to sand to beach, eased by transition lenses. There are a couple of poems in this book that are small, untitled prose poems, and they circle around the idea of the most beautiful thing about one thing is another thing, and if the poem's successful, that other thing is unexpected. So here we go. The most beautiful thing about a convertible is hair. And the most beautiful thing about hair is its disposition. Dead, but alive in the skin in the air. The skin holding on to each strand for dear life, alive in the wind. The most beautiful thing about the wind passing over the skin is sensation. Cellular, invisible, metabolic. What is metabolic is life-sustaining. And the most life-sustaining thing I can think of today is decency. And decency is blind, unseen, until it isn't. This next poem is the title Autobiographia Literaria. It's literally the title of a poem by Frank O'Hara. And in that poem, he has a beautiful line in the middle of which he says, and here I am, the center of all beauty. Autobiographia Literaria. Someday the blank page will rush under me with the grace of a walk in the woods with you who have been silent for years. You will blow sun in the spring-leafed trees, and the damp earth will begin to dry and crack, and the birds who no longer migrate will start to sing, despite global warming. For they too love the author, who stumbles through time. Still, there's a chance that history repeating itself will change course. You're not dead yet, a friend who has passed like to say. And I've been known to perseverate and repeat and repeat, and will probably do so from the grave, my stone etched with the text, Not yet. Not yet. One poem called Self-Portrait Between the Car and the Sea. And I borrowed this title from a painting, one of the last paintings Edvard Munch painted, Self-Portrait Between the Clock and the Bed. And if you think of it for a minute, it was about aging. It was really, again, I think it could have literally been his last painting. So this poem is also about that. Self-Portrait Between the Car and the Sea. I think I'll stay blonde a while longer. Downshifting for the view today, the engine strains in first gear the way on foot my body climbing the last few steps does. You'd hear it too if the heart had a literal voice. Silently pulling for itself, the will wants the body to give it what it wants. How long will these parts last? I put off minding the flags lifting their faces. I watch sea lice flit from shell to sand to beach, eased by transition lenses. Driving. There are still dead zones in America where no one lives and satellites turn a deaf ear. It was only because of the light leaving the sky, ice forming on the glass of my stalled car, I entered the sedan of a stranger, a man who stopped on the interstate in one of those red states shaped like a box. There are still strangers who stop for a woman in distress and think only of her distress. If anyone strikes me on the street, I can return the blow, the reclusive poet wrote, alone and in a circumstance. But what did she know? I did an interview and someone asked me about the identity politics in my poem, and I don't think I answered it quite well enough. I thought later of a great response. I said, you know, I'm a white middle-class woman, you know, I mean, you know, the dominant culture, you know, so identity is not as, you know, is something that's not entirely front and center of my work. But I realize, of course, as a gay woman and as a woman in general, that is also a kind of identity that I wasn't thinking of. And as I read some of these poems, I'll see this. So this next poem is Acento. Which, for those writers in the audience, Acento is a poem made up entirely of text by other people and reconstituted into a poem. And this is Acento, made up of movie titles beginning and ending with Agnes Varda. the late, great Agnes Varda. Okay, here we go. One sings, the other doesn't. One sings stormy weather, gone with the wind. Clueless. Miss Congeniality, the help, the first wives club, in a league of their own. Wild. She's beautiful when she's angry. Death proof. All about my mother, set it off. A girl walks home alone, a question of silence, an unmarried woman. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. But are they? The woman, the hours, itty bitty titty committee, bad girls, women without men, sweetie, the Stepford wives, even cowgirls get the blues. I am somebody if these walls could talk. Lipstick under my burqa, the little girl who lived down the lane, legally blonde, goddess remembered, the love witch, born in flames, vagabond. My tiny car's tiny engine groans and hums the way my mother hummed a little ditty when nervous. The way I do, mulling over something hard, letting my chest send a message to my mouth forming a kind of growl while all along staying shut. I enter the on-ramp of the freeway heading home from a family visit, the pedal to the floor. I pump my chin toward the dashboard, thinking I'm helping. I hear my brother's taunt. What is it with women and cars? We are old, old enough to equate mobility with independence. Real wheels take me out of state, escaping the trap I thought was the small town. For this, I left the ocean, I left the trees, I left Eel Pond with seabirds standing on spring ice, summer surfboards lined up on the berm between the seagrass and the sea. I left my family of origin, my Lucky buried in the backyard, dog heaven, now home to a chalet built by strangers, the chicken coop, the barn gone. When driving, I think of love as a road trip, the soaring, the breakdown, jump starts, the old, the brand new and old reliable. I'm no mechanic, though I once knew how to change a fan belt sheared to a thread. Here the air is fresh. The new mutt who travels with me leaves her nose prints on the passenger windows the way my old dog did, leaving a spot just clear enough to drive through. This next poem Andrea asked me to read, and it's a favorite of mine also. It's dedicated to my wife, Nora. And when we were first dating, Nora wanted, it was very important for me to come and meet this tree that she loved, that was on a walk by her from her house to the sound. This is called Copper Beech. Because it had been quite literally 4 decades since I last climbed a tree, I stood a long while watching you overhead. Your elbows disappeared in the sheets of plum dark leaves, so cool in the heat. I pressed my face against the bark. I patted your dog's snout, lost, my body touching the idea of leaving Earth. I wrapped my arms around a trunk wider than my own, growth and decay in my mouth. I kissed the twins, fear and ecstasy, my feet where my shoulders once were. My fingers reached for the sole of your shoe. A blanket of green held me in its arms, the backsides of leaves last seen from the ground. All right, I'm going to close with another tiny poem that is part of this sequence of poems that circle around the most beautiful thing. And this was in response to seeing an exhibit at the Morgan Library of Sappho's, purported to be Sappho's text on written on papyrus, and the installation was just beautiful and delicate. It's very tiny. Anyway, again, thank you everyone for coming. The scraps of text on papyrus, dry as dirt, attributed to Sappho, are pinned in place by the tiniest strips of archival tape. I had never seen adhesive so delicate, so trusted. The most beautiful thing about trust is what holds it in place.
This is East End, Inc. We heard poet Elaine Sexton reading from her book Drive. Next, Andrea Carter Brown is introduced by Marianne Calendrill of Caneos.
Andrea's work has won many awards and has been published in the Gettysburg Review, Plowshares, Southwest Review, The Atlanta Review, among many others. She is currently series editor of the WordWorks Washington Prize. I'd like to read a little bit of what Alicia Ostreicher, the poet, says about this collection. You know, how does someone begin to encounter such a huge experience as the attacks on 9/11? There are moments in time that pull into themselves all that has gone before and settle like dust or microorganisms upon and within all that follows after. In Andrea Carter Brown's September 12, detail by detail, we watch the process of innocence captured by absolutely unpredicted trauma, and how the experience lives on and on, through shock and terror, through the kindness of strangers, through the heart of a beloved, through grief and elegy, through normalcy that will never again be normal, detail by detail, moment by moment, word by word. I think that's how it's done, word by word. Please join me in welcoming Andrea Carter Brown.
I'm going to start with a poem about living on an estuary. The first section of this book is about life in New York before 9/11. I lived in an apartment in Battery Park City, and on the west was the Hudson River. I could see it from the windows of my apartment, and on the east, a block away as the crow flies, was the World Trade Center. It was a beautiful place to live. It probably still is. But for me, the memories of that day have made it a less happy place to live. But this is about those times. Each boat signs the water. It's an homage to the French poet Guillaume Apollinaire. Each boat signs the water with its wake, the way a thumbprint matches no other, or whales, when they dive, leave a signature, a calm so specific, biologists can tell which individual swims below their boat before the whale surfaces to breathe. I've watched the river 2 years now. By now I know the names of tugs, the ebb and flow of tankers and barges, when the next bright yellow banana boat comes in. I've caught at dawn an ocean liner cruise into port. Or that same afternoon, festooned with pennants and passengers on every deck, depart for parts unknown. Today, a string of perfect petite swells angling for shore, crest then curl into white caps, but never break a surfer's dream. Saltwater pearls strung on a freshwater stream. Even if I hurry down to the river, the boat that left this wake will be too far away to tell. Although the waves it made still lap the wall before they ricochet the other way. So September 12th came into existence because I was in my apartment that morning. I fled. My life was irrevocably changed. And in the aftermath, I discovered, or what I noticed was that the experience of people like me, people who had survived, who were lucky, who hadn't even lost someone they knew or loved, their lives were changed, and the upheaval was subtle and interesting to me. And I think each story was unique. And so I decided to document those stories and that experience. The title poem is an extended prose poem sequence of Poetry of Witness, which starts that morning and takes me through until our return to the apartment, to our apartment for minutes, actually, 4 days later. I'm going to read three short sections from that to give you a sense of the experience. And I'm going to jump right in with the moment that I had left our apartment and was downstairs trying to decide where to go and what to do. "Don't worry," Angel says. "Everything will be okay." It's a doorman's job to reassure. But I know he is wrong. How could two such tall buildings on fire within not come down? For now, standing outside the building lobby in the courtyard, I can see both towers. can see a thick black smoke, orange and red flames, can hear explosions, the steel groaning as it softens and sways, the crackle glass makes shattering. A man hurls an office chair repeatedly against a window on a high floor. At another, glass already gone, two women perch side by side on the narrow sill, hold hands, pause a moment, jump. To avoid going close to the towers, I took a completely different route south, thinking that I could jump into water if I needed to. And it took me eventually to Staten Island, where I didn't know anyone. But I met many people in the same circumstances as I was. And I've written portraits of them. The supervisor from the phone company. I ordered my repair crew into the South Tower minutes before it fell. The woman mumbles to herself. From the back, she looks ancient. Neat braids coiled around her head are powdery white, as are her neck, arms, hands, her face, but not the small square on her forearm, which she rubs obsessively, revealing a patch of ebony. Queens, she answers when asked where she lives. No relatives up north, yes. I am all alone. She doesn't want help. She insists, doesn't want help, all the while trying to remove the gritty, pale ash from her arm, brushing at it, flicking, rubbing, then digging at it until blood comes. I ordered my repair crew into the South Tower. 70, Hector, the garage manager, tells us. That morning, 70 parked their cars, went to work, and never came back. 70 cars abandoned where they sat. Never claimed that night or later by relatives. What is a car when a person vanishes? Inside our car, dust lay so thick on the dashboard, the seats, inside the ventilation ducts. We were afraid to breathe. The detailer didn't know what to do, did the best he could. Still, we did feel safer with the car. In an emergency, we could flee. Not that it helped those 70. So I'm going to jump ahead to what I call the aftermath poems, to the poem that Elaine requested I read for personal reasons, but it sort of sums up a lot of what happened in the months and years afterwards. The title is a quote. It's in italics and is followed with an exclamation mark. Get over it. John J. Paliza, PhD, has copyrighted this little gem of advice. It says so at the bottom. A small piece of tape still sticks to the top. You can picture it in some office cubicle next to the computer. On the first trip back 4 days later, we find it on the sidewalk below our apartment, torn but intact, gritty with dust. by what miracle has this 6x9-inch oak tag card survived? From which floor did it fall or float down? Whose office did it adorn? What happened to him or her? Years later, we are trying to get over it. And it too is an homage to a painter, and this time it's to Turner. The title is Burial Instructions. The setting sun, a golden stripe on the Hudson, beckons. You think you could walk on water. The path across deepens to a rose glow, cut in half by a sailboat tacking for home. Now the sun drops to the horizon. The water blazes as if on fire. The Egyptian dead sailed west to an underground where the sun slept, with unguents preserved, provisioned with loaves, dates, tools, seeds, golden amulets, spouses, children, viziers, servants carved in wooden miniature, as if life after death would continue as we know it. When I am dead, lay me in the ground, in a rough wood box not embalmed, that I may rot in service to some tree, a great white pine or silver beech, till it too dies and falls to the ground.
This is East End Ink. We heard poets Elaine Sexton and Andrea Carter Brown. Elaine Sexton read from Drive, published by Off the Grid Press in 2022. Her previous collections include Sleuth, published by Western Michigan University in 2003. Andrea Carter Brown read from September 12, published by Sheep Meadow Press in 2022. Free literary events at Canyons Books, 290 Main Street in Sag Harbor, include on Friday, December 2nd at 5 p.m., author Sheila DeCoss presents her historical novel, Rose Alone, set in East Hampton. On Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., Dr. Susan Powers presents her new work, Walking on Air, Embracing the Uncertainties of Life. More events are listed at caneosbooks.com. East End Ink programs are archived online at moreeastendink.blogspot.com. East End Ink was produced by Tony Ernst with the aid of Catherine Zoka and Marion Callendrill. This is Hazel Curran.